Okay, it's time to get started. Hello everyone, how are you doing? My name is Maxim Lukyanov. I'm program manager in SharePoint developer team. And today this is another session on SharePoint. In this session, we'll talk about building auto-hosted apps. And you'll come away from this session with better understanding of how auto-hosted apps work and with knowledge of Visual Studio tools and some of the coding practices that you can use to build auto-hosted app yourself. This session is organized in two parts. First, we will dive into technology behind auto-hosted apps, and we'll discuss aspects of hosting environments where these auto-hosted apps get hosted, and also talk about best use cases for this technology. And in second part of the talk, in a practical session, we'll build auto-hosted app from the ground up. We'll go through every step of the process up to a point where we'll have an app package that is ready for deployment in customer environments. So let's start with the history of SharePoint app model. Back in version 2007, SharePoint had a very simple extensibility model. It allowed developers to host their application code directly on SharePoint box. And this was simple yet quite successful model, and we believe that in major part it was because of this capability that SharePoint provided. It allowed, it basically served as an application host for application code the developer wrote. It created this rich ecosystem of SharePoint solutions with a very simple deployment model. Developers would write code, deliver it to customers, and customers would run this code on their SharePoint servers that they have already deployed in their environments. So we kept on working on improving this model. And in version 2010, we introduced SharePoint Sandbox. It provided isolation between custom application code and native SharePoint product code. And this increased robustness of SharePoint server itself and custom solutions built on top of it. So that was great, but we received feedback from developer community as well that capabilities of SharePoint Sandbox were very limited. So in this release, we are taking it to the next level, and we are moving custom code out of the SharePoint box into our external hosting service. And this opens opportunity for developers to use virtually any web-compatible technology to build your SharePoint apps, and this is great. But even within this new app model oriented towards external services, SharePoint continues to provide this application hosting services as well. And this mission is carried forward by auto-hosted apps. Auto-hosted apps is one of the three hosting models that SharePoint supports. And let me give you a quick refresher on these three hosting models. You've heard of them already in the previous sessions. SharePoint hosted model provides the ability for your apps to use native SharePoint components, such as lists, document libraries, or SharePoint pages. Auto-hosted apps, but this model, SharePoint hosted model, doesn't provide any notion of the server-side hosting. So in order to get that, you would need to combine a SharePoint hosted model with one of the two other models. Auto-hosted apps provide automatic application hosting capabilities in Azure. And this is a model that designed to be the simplest way to develop and deploy SharePoint apps. And provider-hosted model allows you to connect your app to any external service, and this is the most flexible option. But it also requires you to provide hosting for this external service as well. In this session, we'll focus on the auto-hosted apps, and we'll talk about its technology and define boundaries of use for this technology. And we'll also talk about when it actually makes sense to move to a provider-hosted model, to a more complex provider-hosted model. So what is auto-hosted apps? It's a self-contained SharePoint app that gets deployed into Azure automatically whenever end users install this app in their SharePoint online sites. The structure of the auto-hosted app is very simple. It contains just one Azure website, one SQL Azure database, and optionally Azure workflows. The great thing about auto-hosted apps is that you can build them using standard stack of Microsoft technologies. Your Azure website is defined as an ASP.NET application, which you can build using familiar technologies such as web forms, web pages, or MVC. And your SQL database is a full-featured Azure SQL database with stored procs and triggers and everything you can have in SQL Azure database. This technology of auto-host setups is available today in SharePoint Online environments in a preview mode. It's not available yet in on-premises environments, and we look forward towards enabling this technology on-prem in future releases of SharePoint. And while in preview mode, this technology also comes with few limitations. For example, we won't accept auto-host setups in SharePoint Store while they're in preview. And also, size of the SQL database will be limited to 1 gigabyte. Another thing that we'll enable once we move this technology out of the preview mode is we'll extend SharePoint Online disaster recovery capabilities to auto-host setups. So in the event when primary data center goes down, SharePoint will be able to switch your auto-host setup to a backup data center and restore availability of your application within minutes. And that would happen transparently for you as a developer. You won't need to write any additional code to benefit from this advanced disaster recovery capabilities. Later in the coding session, we'll actually see how this happens, how this automatic transition happens under the covers. Next great feature of auto-host setups is automatic instance isolation. When users install auto-host setup on their SharePoint sites, every site gets its own dedicated, let's say, separate auto-host setup instance. And that provides automatic security boundary around each instance of the app. One instance cannot get to the data of another site or another instance of the app installed on the different site. For you as a developer, that means that you can simplify logic of your application. You no longer need to write to partition your database between customers and make sure that you write code in a way that never mix data from different customers together. So you write your app as a single-tenant, simple app, and take advantage of the fact that every customer will get his own separate database. So let's take a look at this auto-host setups in action, how this looks to end users. So in this demo, I'll show you CUDA's app, and this app is actually a finalized version of the app that we will build in the last demo in this session. But for now, we'll take a look at the experience that end users have when they install these auto-host setups in their SharePoint Online environments. So let's say you're my developers and I'm your customer. And over lunch, I mentioned to you this idea of building this CUDA's app. And 2 hours later, I'm already receiving a prototype of the app from you. So that is great, if it's possible. And I'm asking my tenant admin to install this prototype in our staging environment so we can take a look at what this prototype does. So the tenant admin would go to app catalog. Every SharePoint Online site has app catalog. And switch to apps for SharePoint section and just simply upload this app package that we have received from developer, from you, into this app catalog. And as this app package is self-contained, as any auto-hosted app is, and it doesn't have any dependencies on external services, so it can be uploaded to any SharePoint Online environment, and it will keep working because all it needs to be to work is contained within the app package. So now it's available in my SharePoint Online app catalog, and it's ready to be installed on SharePoint sites. So I can go to site contents and click add an app and install this CUDA's prototype app on my SharePoint site. So I'll grant permissions for this app to access data in my site, and SharePoint starts installation process for this app. Behind the scenes, it deploys resources into Azure automatically and usually takes around 30 to 40 seconds. While it does it, let me show you another instance of this app that I have already installed, and later on we'll check on the status of that guy. So this CUDA's prototype, let's launch it. So the CUDA's app is quite a simple app that allows employees in the company to send CUDA's messages to each other to celebrate the great work that they're doing at work. So as such an app, you can see the first thing, probably first thing you notice actually is that this CUDA's app have the same styling applied to it as a site where I installed it. So that's first feature of this app that we'll build. And second, it allows me to create CUDA's. So let's create one. And then I'll point your attention towards this name. Our application recognizes my SharePoint user identity and pre-fills the sender field with my real name. So let's send kudos to my team. And we'll say, great job building auto-hosted apps. So another, so this kudos got created in our app so other people can come to the app and see it. And another function of this app is to post this message on my newsfeed as well, so other people in the organization can see it, people who follow me on SharePoint, so can see it and celebrate it with me. So this is a newsfeed entry that our app created automatically on the newsfeed via kudos app prototype. Okay, so that's basic functionality of our app. Let's check on the instance that we have installed. So it finished installing, and if you launch it, we'll see a difference between these two instances of the app. And this is an example of app instance isolation. So this new instance that we have just created doesn't have any data in it, because that's a separate instance. It has separate database. So the CUDA that we have created in this app doesn't exist in that one. And you can also notice that it has different styling because it's installed on the different site. Okay, let's switch back to the deck. And we'll take a look at some of the technical details that happened while this installation process to Azure was performed. So from the demo, you see that everything starts from the app package. Once the app package is created, it can be deployed into an app catalog or into a SharePoint store in the future. And at this moment, it becomes available for end users in SharePoint sites to install. And when users click install, this app gets deployed into SharePoint, the app package gets copied into a SharePoint site, and SharePoint starts deployment jobs. These deployment jobs are persistent objects that can retry the operations in case of intermittent network failures, and together they form a transaction. In case that any of the deployment jobs fail, other deployment jobs will be rolled back, and this ensures that your app is installed only in a completely consistent state. This property of SharePoint auto-hosted apps to ensure that apps are always in consistent state is something we call a reliable lifecycle of apps, or robust lifecycle. And this transactional install is kind of a first part of it. And the second part is delivered by another important lifecycle operation, by upgrade. So during upgrade, you as a developer would create a new version of the app package, publish it to our app catalog. And at that moment, user who have installed initial version of the app will get an option to upgrade your app. So at the moment in time when it is convenient for end users, they can click upgrade, and SharePoint will start upgrade transaction. First, it will switch original version of the app into read-only mode, and then we'll create a copy of this app, of the instance of the app. And then this copy will be upgraded to a new version according to your new app package. And in case of any failure during this upgrade process, this copy of the app will be removed, and users will be rolled back safely into the original working version of the app. If in the case that upgrade succeeds, SharePoint will switch load balancer to a new version of the app and remove the original version. So as you can see, SharePoint goes to great lengths in ensuring this transactional notion of upgrade operation. And together with install, this form a robust lifecycle of auto-hosted apps. So the next topic of our talk is about hosting environments. You might have questions like where all of these Azure instances get installed and who pays for hosting. So let's talk about that. Auto-hosted apps are installed in a special Microsoft-owned Azure account. And this configuration allows us to deliver two important properties of auto-hosted apps. First, no person has access to this account, and that is important for end users of the auto-hosted apps because it increases security of the data that they put in the auto-hosted apps. And second, developers don't need to pay for hosting of auto-hosted apps. Hosting fees are transferred to the end users And that is important for developer community because that enables you to deliver your app to thousands of customers without any investment in the hosting infrastructure. On top of these two properties, we also made it easy for tenants to pay for the hosting. Microsoft aggregates individual hosting fees, such as CPU compute time, bandwidth use, and storage use, into a fixed and simple per-user price. This means that tenants pay for hosting of auto-hosted apps proportionally to the number of users that use these auto-hosted apps. And in App Catalog, this concept is implemented using app hosting licenses. Every tenancy gets some number of hosting licenses included with their subscription, and they can assign these hosting licenses to applications to allocate some hosting resources to those applications. And if they need to host more apps, they can buy more hosting licenses. In SharePoint Store, we expect to have similar per-user pricing model, but details of this so far are not determined at this moment. So to give you kind of, to make it a little bit more concrete for you, let's take a look at how these hosting licenses are assigned and managed. So for that, we'll go back to our app catalog into our apps for SharePoint section. And here I will point your attention towards this bar on the right. It shows number of hosting licenses available in your tenancy and number of hosting licenses used. So right now, we are using zero because we haven't assigned any hosting licenses to our applications. So now let's assign some number of hosting licenses to our CUDA's prototype. To do this, I'll edit metadata of the application. And along all of these fields that describe our application, we'll have a hosting licenses field that allows us to set to allocate some number of hosting licenses to this app. Let's allocate 15. And SharePoint will recalculate that now we have 15 licenses used. And you can also see that this particular app has 15 licenses assigned to it. So that's basically, that's it. That's how app hosting licenses work. It's a pretty simple model. So the next question that you might have is how these hosting licenses translate into actual hosting resources that your app have or can use. So with each app hosting license assigned to an app gets more hosting resources. And this graph, for example, represents how CPU compute time is allocated to an app based on the number of hosting licenses assigned to this app. The important thing about this graph is that this is not a hard limit. Each tenancy has a shared pool of hosting resources. And if there are hosting resources that are not allocated to a specific app, other apps can use these hosting resources on top of their own allocation. So it's a kind of shared pool at the tenancy level. Another important point of this graph is that, as you can see on the right side of it, is that each auto-hosted app has a fixed maximum amount of hosting resources that it can use. This is an important consideration as it limits scalability of auto-hosted apps and represents important consideration for you when you actually choose a hosting model for your application. This graph is for your information, kind of later for later reference. It documents other usage quotas that we have implemented for auto-hosted apps, and we won't stop on it for too much. It's just for your reference. Okay, so use cases. At this moment, you basically have all of the basic facts about how auto-hosted apps work. And we can talk about what's the best uses for this technology. Auto-hosting is in its first version, and while designing it, we were focusing on the specific scenario, on the scenario of team apps. And if you order all of the apps according to the number of users that they have, you'll get this classical distribution where on the left side, you have smaller number of apps that have high number of users. And on the right side, you have larger number of apps that have smaller number of users. So team apps, this right-hand side of the distribution is what we call team apps. Team apps focus on solving specific or unique business problems at the team and departmental levels. And as a, and in SharePoint, this is a common scenario. There are many teams and a large number of unique business problems. And this drives the requirement towards having a large number of unique or highly customized apps that solve these problems. And we designed Atto Hosting as the best and fastest tool to build this type of apps. If you need to build more complicated app that requires higher scale or uses some advanced Azure features, we recommend you to build it as a full-featured Azure app within the provider-hosted model. So as you can see, Atto Hosting or Atto Hosted apps, their greatest advantage is simplified development and deployment models. So now let's take a look how you can build an app. And we'll build this. We'll build the CUDA's app that you have seen. And we'll start from scratch. So we'll create a new SharePoint project. And let's switch to our apps for SharePoint section. So as you probably seen in previous sessions, new Visual Studio tools provide very simple entry point for creating SharePoint apps. There is just one type of project that you can select. That's great. So let's select that one, and we'll call our app CUDA's app. I'll deploy it on my developer site in SharePoint Online Tenancy. And that would mean that we'll basically develop against remote SharePoint server. That's a new capability of new SharePoint tools. And the type of the app will be auto-hosted. By default, Visual Studio creates a web forms project that to build out our auto-hosted app. And that's a great technology. You can use it to build an app. In this demo, though, we'll use MVC project. This is the first time when SharePoint tools, when you can build your SharePoint apps using MVC technology. So we'll remove this WebForms project and instead add MVC project. And I'll just create standard Visual Studio MVC project here, MVC4, and we'll call it CUDA's MVC. You can use any of the configurations of the MVC project. In this demo, we'll use basic one because it contains, it already includes entity framework, which we'll use as a data access layer of our application. So now we have our web project here. And as a next step, let's add a data layer for our application or database project. And we can do that again using standard Visual Studio database project. So now we have these three completely independent projects. And the next step would be to form these three projects into a single auto-hosted app. And we can do this by changing properties of the SharePoint app. SharePoint app project has this key properties in here, the SQL database project and web project. And we can turn our app into an auto-hosted app by simply specifying these properties, by linking these projects together. So I can link my SharePoint app to the database project, and Visual Studio will be smart enough to actually update properties of this database project to make it compatible with the auto-hosting infrastructure. So it will switch our SQL project into a SQL Azure type. And we'll do the same with the web project. We'll link it to the CUDA's, to our MVC project. And I'll need to update it to .NET Framework 4. And it will also change some properties of the web project to make it compatible with auto hosting. For example, it added references to our client to SharePoint client libraries, so we can use them in the web project immediately. And it added token helper that provides helpful routines for our web project to parse SharePoint tokens and authenticate back to SharePoint using new OAuth infrastructure. So now these projects are linked together. Actually, let me change the .NET framework type. We're actually upgrading our clusters, Windows Azure clusters, into .NET Framework 4.5. So you will be able to use 4.5 as well, like in a few weeks. Okay, so now we have these projects linked together. And one additional point I wanted to make here is we just formed our Atta-hosted app by linking it with this database and web project. But you can do as easily the opposite, the reverse conversion. You can remove these links in the SharePoint app project, and that would turn it back into a provider-hosted app. This basically talks to a simplicity of conversion between these two types. If you're starting developing your app as an Atta-hosted, at any moment you can convert it back into a provider-hosted model and like increase its scale in Azure, deploy your app into your own Azure account. So you're not locked into one of these models. You can always go back and forth between the two because the technologies behind it and the code that you invest in your app is basically the same. So now let's create a data model for our application. And we can use any approach, basically virtually any approach that Visual Studio supports. We can start creating tables in this database project, and Visual Studio now provides great tools for that. Or we can use Entity Framework to do this for us. And within the Entity Framework, we can use, again, database-first approach, model-first approach, or code-first. For this demo, I'll use the code-first approach, as it is slightly faster in terms of the demo. In code-first approach, we start with creating a classes, class definitions that describe shape of our data. So let's call it CUDAS model. And the CUDAS model is a really simple one, and I'll use the snippet to define it. It basically specifies sender, recipient, and message fields for the list of our CUDAS. In the code-first approach, what's great is that Entity Framework will then use these class definitions to go back to our database and provision all of the SQL tables that are needed to hold this data in the database automatically. So I don't need to manipulate my database project in any way. On the first call into our application, Entity Framework will create tables required in our databases for me. So now let's use another awesome feature of Visual Studio and MVC. After we build this project with this new model, we can use MVC scaffolding features to create a bulk of the UI for our application. So let's call this new controller, home controller, so it navigates to this controller by default. We'll point it towards our CUDAS model, and we'll let Visual Studio to create controller and default views for our application. Okay, so Visual Studio created this controller with default actions in it and set of views that allows us to create, delete, or enumerate our CUDAS. So far it was quite standard MVC programming, and now is a key point in our demo. Now we will turn this app into a SharePoint aware app, or app that can talk back to SharePoint and use SharePoint features. And the place where we'll do this is this creation of the data context. By default, this data context connects to the database using connection string specified in a web.config. And we'll need to change that because SharePoint auto-hosted infrastructure will provision separate database for each instance of the app. So what we want our app to connect to the database that was provisioned specifically for this instance of the app. We can do this with the code that looks like this. So on request, we will construct data context based on the connection string that we take from SharePoint. The only missing piece here is actually how we establish the SharePoint context. And we can write code right here in the controller that talks back to SharePoint and uses token helper to connect to SharePoint and retrieve this string. But in MVC, we have a better option, and actually the right approach to build this type of common pieces of functionality is to extract it and separate it out into MVC filter. So this is what I did for this demo. So let me add this MVC filter into the project. I'll put it in the filters folder so it looks nice and organized. And I'll add an MVC filter that I have already created in here. So this MVC filter is a standard, or let's say common element that you can use in any of your controllers in your MVC application. And actually, in any SharePoint MVC application, this code won't change. This is a standard component. As a standard component, we actually are going to publish it for your use on MSDN first. So you'll be able to download it and use this component as one of the tools in your developer toolbox. And later in the session, I'll provide you with a link to our MSDN section where you will be able to find this MVC filter. And eventually, we actually look forward towards adding this MVC filter automatically to MVC projects, just as we do with Token Helper. So that's going to be a standard component, but we can take a look at how it works anyways. So the first thing, let's use this MVC filter on our application. In MVC, you do this by specifying this filter as an attribute to your controller class. So now MVC will take care of running our filter every time a request is received by this controller. And this filter will establish SharePoint context for us and will make sure that this code works. So first, let's take a look what this primary operation that this filter does. Whenever a request is received by our controller, this onAction executing method will be called. And the first thing it does, it extracts SharePoint context token from the current request. And this is done by this constructor. Let's take a look at that one. So it is pretty simple. It uses token helper that is already included in our application to extract token from the request, SharePoint context token, and validate it, and then store it in the object. It also stores the host URL. So once this is done, this SharePoint context object is then stored in the session state. And this is needed in order to make sure that users of our application can navigate from one page in our app to another. The way it works is when users launch our application from SharePoint, SharePoint on the first browse sends this context token to our application. But then we need to make sure that we store it somewhere, so when users go navigate within our application, we have access to this context token. So in this demo, we use session state to store it. You can use global dictionary or database to store it. That's all acceptable. And as you can see, we store it in the session. And if we don't find the context token in the request, we'll retrieve context token from the session state in the subsequent calls. And the last use case that this application handles is the case when a context token is not available in the request, nor it's available in the session state. And your application needs to handle that case. This happens when users bookmark your app and then navigate to your app directly using bookmark. In that case, there is no session state, and SharePoint hasn't provided us with the context token to talk back to SharePoint. So in that case, our application will need to redirect back to SharePoint and ask for a context token, for a new context token. So you can see that here, we redirect back to SharePoint using this getRedirect function. And getRedirect function basically uses appRedirect.spx, and as a parameter, it provides our return URL. Basically, it's a callback to SharePoint, hey, give me context token so I can render this page for the user. Okay, so that was how SharePoint context filter works. At this point, actually, our app is in a workable state, so let's launch it. Before I do this, actually, let me change a couple of parameters. So first, we will make sure that our start page points to our home controller, and then we'll also add some nice icon to our application. Eventually, our app will post this CUDAs to the newsfeed, so let's grant it permissions to do so. And we'll need write permissions on the tenant level and read permissions on the user profiles to do this operation. So now it should be in a workable condition. Let's launch it. So while Visual Studio installing our app, let's actually use this time to resolve a couple of other mysteries that we have in our application here. So how this current property and database connection string actually works. So if you look at that one, it's a simple singleton that uses this context, a SharePoint context object that we have stored in the session state. And as a fallback, it tries to also retrieve the context token from the SharePoint, from the HTTP request. And then once the SharePoint context is established, it retrieves database connection string. And it does it by using this function, which under the covers uses SharePoint client object model to talk back to SharePoint and retrieve this database connection string. You can see that first we construct client context based on the properties that we extracted from SharePoint. And then it uses retrieve app database connection string routine to basically call back to SharePoint and retrieve the database connection string. This is a place where our app is kind of granted disaster recovery capabilities for free. Because of the runtime resolution of the connection string to a database, at any moment when SharePoint decides that, hey, it's time to switch to a backup data center because something is wrong with the primary data center, our application will automatically be switched to a backup database as well because this connection string will change. And as long as we use this pattern of development, you don't need to do anything else in addition to benefit from the disaster recovery capabilities that SharePoint provides for auto-hosted apps. Okay, so our app has launched. Let's grant permissions to this app to access data in my SharePoint site. And on the first launch, it used Entity Framework Code First Approach to actually create database tables for our application. And so far, it's a bare bones MVC project. But it allows me to already create some CUDAs. So it's a functional application. Another thing that you may notice here is that it uses localhost. It is deployed in the localhost. This is something Visual Studio does automatically when we start debug session. Instead of deploying our app into Azure, it deploys it into a local IIS Express instance, and that allows us to debug our application locally on the box. Okay, the next step in our demo is to make our app look more like a SharePoint app, to integrate it with SharePoint. We can do this by using SharePoint Chrome control. I'll add this Chrome control in this place. And I'll use this snippet to do so. So this is a snippet of SharePoint Chrome control. First, we load the library of the Chrome control from SharePoint site. And once this library is loaded, it will inspect our DOM model of the SharePoint document, of the HTML document, and will find this div placeholder element that says that I am a Chrome control placeholder, and will replace it with the actual Chrome control. It will use this metadata to do this operation, and one of the pieces of metadata here is this icon that will be displayed. So let me add this icon into my application. That one. And also it uses a little trick here. It specifies this onCSS loaded callback. So this JavaScript function will be called when our Chrome control is finished loading and finished loading CSS styles from the parent SharePoint site. So this function is defined here. And all it does, it just shows the body of our HTML document, which I have hidden by default. So this little trick allows us to avoid this flashing of the CSS styles when CSS styles changed from the default ones that our application had into CSS styles that are loaded from the SharePoint site. So now we'll always see our application with the Chrome, with the look and feel of the SharePoint site where it's installed. Okay, let's take a look at this version of the application. This time you'll see that Visual Studio actually launches our application very quickly. It skips install and uninstall and install steps. This is a nice thing about new Visual Studio tools is that they are smart enough to detect little changes in our application, like changing of one page. And instead of doing full redeployment cycle, it just updates the page directly in our IIS process and just launches it. So that allows you to achieve this very fast F5 cycle. So now we have the Chrome that uses styles from our parent site and the icon. So you can see that the styles are similar to the ones that we have on the on my developer site. And let's go to the next step. So the next step, in next step, we'll use we'll add a little bit of the business logic to our application. And we'll do this in a home controller. So we'll make sure that whenever CUDAS is created, it uses a real name of the user. And we can do this in this create action. Again, we'll use SharePoint client-side object model to talk back to SharePoint and retrieve current user object. This current user object has a title property that contains the full name of the user. So we'll use this title property to preset the sender field of the CUDAS that is about to be created. We'll send this modified CUDAS object to the view. We'll also use the same code in our post version of the create action, the moment when user actually submits the CUDAS to be created. And in this version, we'll again make sure that the CUDAS is created with the real name of the user. So we'll use the same code to enforce the name of the CUDAS that is about to be created. And the last snippet that I'll use is to post this CUDAS, once we created it in database, post it into our newsfeed. And we can do this with this code. Again, we use SharePoint client object model. That's a common pattern for all SharePoint application moving forward. We use social feed manager to create a post. Then we set properties of this post, like text, the link back to an app, and nice icon that accompanies this post. And then we call create post APIs in SharePoint to create it. In order to make this code work, we need to include reference to the client object model assembly that contains these classes, the social feed manager. And it is a user profiles assembly. So let me include that one. And there is another trick that you need to know. You need to make sure that this assembly has copy local attribute set to true. Otherwise, when your auto-hosted app is deployed into Azure, it won't have this assembly with it, and it won't work. So in order to make sure that this assembly is included in your app package, you need to set this property to true. Okay. And let's resolve that reference. So the last thing here is to make our app look a little bit better. And in the create view, we'll remove the editor for the sender view. We'll change it to a display, and we'll remove validation message. So that would be less confusing for the users. So now let's launch this application. Okay, it looks like it's working. Let's try to create a CUDAS. Yeah, so this is a little bug that happens when IIS Express instance decides to reload itself in the middle of debugging session. So all we need to do is to refresh it to make sure that our app works. Okay, let's try again. Okay, so now we have our logic working correctly as expected here. And we can send CUDAS, for example, to Azure Websites team. And say, hey, CUDAS for great technology. Okay, that one is created. And let's check whether a newsfeed item was created. We'll go back to a newsfeed. And yay, it's working. And now you can see that it actually works through our new app. This new spot was created via CUDAS app, as opposed to a CUDAS prototype. And That brings us to a full functionality of the app that you saw in the beginning of this session. So the last step in our demo is to make sure that we have an app package that we can publish or that we can send to the end user so they can publish it in their environment. We can do this with publish command in Visual Studio. And it will generate this app package. And this app package connects us back to the original demo. We can send this app package to our customer, and customer will be able to install it in their SharePoint Online environments. You can even take a look inside of this app package, and you will see that it contains, along the app manifest, it contains also a web deploy package that represents our Azure website, and the duckpack package that represents our database. Okay, so let's switch back to our deck, and in this session we basically walked through the technology of auto-hosted apps, and you have seen how you can create a new auto-hosted app from scratch. What I would like you to kind of take away from this session is these 3 points. First, SharePoint auto-hosted apps allows you to reduce your development costs when you develop your apps by providing this automatic hosting environment. You can also use standard and familiar Microsoft tools to build your apps, which makes it kind of easier and faster to develop them. And along the way, auto-hosted apps bring reliable infrastructure for your applications by providing robust lifecycle and advanced disaster recovery capabilities. So here's a link to the section in our MSDN documentation, this dev.office.com, where you can find information about auto-hosted apps and SharePoint apps in general, and where we'll post this MVC filter if you'll need this one. And this is references to other sessions on SharePoint that happened during Build Conference. I encourage you to watch recordings of these sessions if you're interested in other aspects of SharePoint apps. And with that, I'll open discussion for questions. The question is, will this 1 gigabyte limitation go away? The answer is yes. Once we move, once we remove the preview status from auto-hosted apps, we expect to remove the 1 gigabyte limitations as well.
You said it's only available for SharePoint Online?
The question is it only available for SharePoint Online? Currently, yes. SharePoint Online is the only environment that we support auto-hosted apps in. Moving forward, we have plans to make this technology available in on-premises environments as well, but the timeline isn't decided yet. Yes?
The filter that you wrote was using cookies to the session objects to maintain the session. What happens when the browser is blocking certified cookies?
The question was, the session state uses cookies to preserve the state. What happens if a browser doesn't allow third-party cookies? So in that case, the session state approach wouldn't work, and you would need to switch to alternative approaches. You can store this state in database. You can store the state in global dictionary and not use cookies at all. The question is, are SharePoint apps accepted into a SharePoint store, if I can rephrase it? Auto-hosted apps. Yes, the answer is yes. The same limitation, auto-hosted apps currently in preview mode. And as a preview technology, we intended for evaluation and testing. And therefore, we don't accept auto-hosted apps into a SharePoint store yet. But once we move auto-hosted technology out of preview mode, then we'll accept auto-hosted apps will be supported in SharePoint store.
Do you have a timeline on that?
It's hard to talk about timelines. I don't think it's decided firmly enough for me to announce these timelines. Yes?
Is it also possible to use other database technology than MC Framework?
So the question is, do you support other technologies to access database? So is it specific to SQL Azure? The question is,
No, if you're using SQL Azure, but you do not use Entity Framework, is that possible?
Oh, OK, yes, that is possible. You can access your SQL Azure database using any technology, and you don't have to use Entity Framework. I'll extend on this answer is, the only database technology that is supported in auto-hosted apps is SQL Azure. You cannot store your own database, for example, in your auto-hosted app. You have to connect to the SQL Azure database. Yes?
Is it possible to change the URL, or because the URL contains a width now or something like that? Is it possible
for
something else?
Yeah, so the question is it possible to change the URL of the auto-hosted app? Currently, it's not supported, unfortunately. So yes, you're right. In the URL of the app, and we actually can take a look at that. In the URL of the app, if you launch it, you can see that it uses the GUID. So that's actually the Office 365 domain. Office365apps.net is a domain where we host our auto-hosted apps. And each instance of the auto-hosted app is provisioned into its own subdomain, which is designated by GUID. And that's a hard fixed URL scheme for now. We don't support changing this part. But this is something we are looking into in future releases to kind of support better URL, better domain names for auto-hosted apps. Okay, if you don't have any more questions, I'll be around if you have them later. And thank you very much for coming to the session. Thank you for your attention.